What do you think has been the biggest change this Labor Day, this past year, compared to the previous?
I think the unrelenting attack on our democracy, led by the President of the United States.
And that has, for you, specific meaning in the labor movement.
Yeah, it has all kinds of concerns, not the least of which is the right to organize, the right to, well, let's start with the right to free speech and the right to freedom of expression and assembly. I think that these things are under attack in a way that they'd never been in my lifetime. You have the question of free press and the role of the press, which, while not directly tied to the day-to-day situation that some, you know, at some workplace, plant, institution, education institution, some government agency, directly, absolutely would impact in the long term. Our organizations are small D democratic organizations, which need a democratic society in which to function. So that's an overall general concern. Maybe it's in the realm of direction of society. The immediate concern was the decision of Janus by the Supreme Court in the last month.
I want to get to Janus in a second, but let me jump back to what you just said. Do you think the right to organize is tied to the First Amendment?
I think the right to organize is tied to basic democratic rights in any open society.
So restriction on one, you would say.
It absolutely has an impact on the others.
Rising tide lifts all boats. This would be the other scenario. Sinking tide would hurt all boats, you say.
We've ranted and raved against the race to the bottom, which was the drift in the American economy over the last 30 years towards a much bigger distinction between rich and poor. We've gone after that, and with good reason, because it's actually happened. But the main reason it's happened is because the level of union density has shrunk in certain key sectors of the economy and in certain areas of the country. That's actually, if you start to analyze it, what's happened. And when the labor movement has 25% of the population, that isn't 25%, because it impacts on well over 50%. If you do the numbers, one person times 2.5 people, for example, or 3 people. And when it's 11%, it has less impact. Now, you can't see it as well in states like New York, or California, and Oregon, Washington, Illinois, Massachusetts, which have become known as the blue states. But you can see it in the states where the union movement has all but been decimated. And the standard of living has continued to erode. And we play a big role in maintaining a standard of living for people who work for a living, people who punch in, sign in, work for somebody else. We play a big role in maintaining that standard of living.
Are there fewer union members this year than there was last Labor Day?
No, actually, there's a few more. But that trend began during the latter part of the Obama presidency, and it's continued somewhat. We're going to see, this may be a lag in indications, because the Labor Board had a rule which they imposed about the second year of the Obama administration, right through to the end, of elections being held on a much faster track. We'll see if that maintains itself into now that a new board with a Republican
Some
majority.
Trump appointees
yeah,
there.
That's right.
Talk to me about the basic membership. I think the stereotype, and you and I have talked about this one before, mm-hmm. The stereotype is that public sector unions around here are really strong, and that if I'm talking to someone like you, the majority of your members must come from the public sector.
That's an understandable conception.
But it's false.
It's not accurate. Now, I'm not going to say the public sector unions aren't strong. Of course they are. And that they don't have almost 50% of our membership. They do. But our numbers still show it's about a 52-48 break for private and over public. 53-47, somewhere around there. We have a very large healthcare sector, almost entirely unionized. We still have 11% of our workforce in industrial manufacturing. We have a large number of warehousing and food processing plants. We have all kinds of cheese plants and ice cream plants and milk plants around Western New York that employ a lot of people. They're all union, without exception, in fact.
Okay. Now, you mentioned public sector unions. Now talk about Janus. What it's been about 2 months. The decision came down from the Supreme Court in late June.
That's right.
June 28th.
That's right.
Little over 2 months now. Mm-hmm. Have the Dyer predictions come true?
It's not clear. I can tell you that from this is anecdotal from the unions that have the public sector in the city and the county. It does not appear that it's caused a large erosion. The school teachers unions, it does not appear it's caused a large erosion. The reason for this, in my view, the fireman certainly hasn't caused a large erosion. And I think the reason is because the unions that are affected decided way before Janus came out. In fact, they started working on it when it was Friedrichs, and then it was 4-4 because Antonin Scalia passed away, that they were going to reinvigorate their efforts with their rank and file members to remind them of the importance of having collective bargaining and having a union. And I think it's to a large measure, it's worked well.
Have they seen less donations as a result of it?
Through
the checkoff, through.
Oh, I don't know the answer to that.
Have they lost money?
Let me ask it differently. Well, don't forget now that, yes, if you had 100% paying either agency or direct membership dues, agency fee or membership dues, and you lose one, you lost money. Okay, so sure they've lost some. I'm sure they've lost some, but it's not going to have a big impact if it's only a small number. And again, it's anecdotal. You'd have to check with the unions that are most affected. From what I understand, they're not looking at layoffs. They're not looking at cutting program. They're not looking at any of that sort of thing. So I'm hopeful. That because they're doing such good work for their members, that it will continue.
Does it impede their ability to organize?
I can't answer that directly, except to say that if you lose enough operating money, it's not capital,
right.
They're not building anything, but if you lose enough operating resources, obviously it's going to impact on some aspect of your program. Whether you decide to cut in one area or another isn't for me to say sitting here talking to you on a Labor Day. It's up to the organizations that are actually faced with that potential.
Now, what about their ability to do political work?
Well, it's always was separate. This is one of the things that...
And myth number three here, basically.
Yeah, well... The
separate pot of money.
Yes, and over the years, this has been an area of tremendous confusion. I think much of it was being pushed by certain quarters of our body politic. But the only money that can go for political action is the voluntary money. That's directly goes to candidates.
Contributed to political
that's
action
correct,
funds.
To funds. That, and that's a voluntary chunk of money. The basic dues doesn't go to giving endorsements and giving money to candidates. That's a voluntary. So if Dave Debo is a member of XYZ union and signs a deduction card based on him wanting to give money for a political action committee properly qualified by the federal government, he can do so. And if he doesn't do that, the money can't come out of their paycheck.
Wasn't some of the rationale for Janus that people didn't want their money going to things that they didn't necessarily believe in?
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And again, you'd have to ask Janus, for the guy from Illinois, what his rationale was. The fact is, the overwhelming amount of money, percentage-wise, goes to collective bargaining and servicing of labor agreements, which provides wages, benefits, and conditions as a contractual obligation that can be enforced in court. And it's a regulation on the employer in the sense that it provides the employer for certain requirements that they wouldn't necessarily have to do if you didn't have a collective bargaining agreement. That's the essence of economics of the labor relations system in our country. We have the right to bargain collectively on behalf if there's a majority status is proven. For particular bargaining units, this is the bedrock of it. It's being eroded. That's what Janus really will end up doing. And then, if it's them first, if it's the public sector first, it's only a matter of time before it becomes the private sector.
Apart from what you said about basic erosion of rights, apart from what you said about Janus, have there been in this past year particular companies that either lost or if you need to share it, won battles with their employers?
Well, we've had in the last year, we have a major organizing campaign going on at Wentz. And that one is one we've paid close attention to because our affiliate, the Iron Workers Local, is engaged in bargaining. That's not yet finished a contract. The last year, I'd have to really think about it, Dave, has been a pretty quiet one on the front of labor relations locally compared to some recent years when we've had a number of strikes or we've had a gigantic campaign at Catholic Health. We had, I think in the last year, we had the settlement with the ATU, the bus drivers. I think it was towards the beginning of the year, and I may be losing track of things. The Buffalo Teachers Federation finished their contract. And if it wasn't, it was certainly since the last time we talked. That's for sure. Whether it was in 17 or in early 18, off the top of my head, I just don't remember. So we've had a pretty good year of stabilizing wages and benefits through collective bargaining. And most of them, as you know, nobody ever hears about.
Why is that?
Because I don't think it's considered very newsworthy. Most unions don't run around tooting their horn about these kinds of things unless they are in a situation where they have to because they're in a fight.
And you haven't had to drive out the inflatable rat. You haven't had to have rallies.
Only at Wentz.
But there hasn't been that really public component. There hasn't been the...
Not particularly in the last 12 months. Now, this is subject to change at any given time. And I'm...
You reserve the right.
Yeah. And also, I don't know... I don't pay attention personally, and my staff doesn't keep records every single time a collective bargaining agreement is executed, ratified and then executed by the parties. There are 145 local unions in our region, and many of them have 100 contracts with different employers, or 50 or 75 or even 13 or 14. You multiply it all out. We've never done this number, but it's well into the thousands. And you'd have to go to FMCS, and they'll tell you how many collective bargaining agreements actually exist in our region, and it's well into the thousands. So, and given that they're usually every 3 years, that means probably, let's say if it's 1,000, and they're bargaining on a triannual basis. Well, it's 333 a year. In 1 year, it would be 334.
Talk about trade. Earlier this past week, President Trump basically rescinded NAFTA, said he's going to approach a new deal with Mexico and probably a side deal with Canada. How does that affect your membership?
We don't know. We don't know the details. We just I just read something this morning, and I don't know the details. And frankly, the president's track record on verifiable statements is not very good. And also, things happen, and then they change, and then we overreact or we react, and then we should wait. So we're taking a longer view and waiting to see when it actually. What actually has transpired. Only thing I can say is that the Canadians haven't spoken on the question yet, and it's a NAFTA. It's not the Mexican-American.
Right. No, it's American. Agreement. It includes them.
That's correct. So we'll have to take a look. But 2 weeks from now I'll have something to say. The way this kind of stuff works, too, is that people who are actually in the business of analyzing trade work for the National AFL-CIO and work for a lot of the big unions. And they'll make an analysis, especially the unions that are most impacted by NAFTA.
In a general sense, do you think unions are conflicted here? I can picture, and I know the Canadian auto workers, for example, liked the idea of some of the tariffs that initially came down. Mm-hmm. I can see plants where your workers are probably in favor of tariffs, but we've heard all this talk about trade war. And the repercussions, without getting into the nitty-gritty and the analysis that you say is being done in Washington, can we say that tariffs are good or bad?
I just think that there's always been tariffs and taxes on products coming in and out of countries. It goes back to to the Middle Ages. It goes back to the Crusades, for crying out loud. And the question of fair trade, which involves, in my view, fair labor relations throughout the world, has to be a component of this discussion. It usually isn't. It can't be just boiled down to some simple slogan. It really has to deal with details. Now, I know that some unions are okay with certain extra tariffs on certain products, and other unions are frightened by the same or different tariffs because they have for example, the steel workers, the auto workers, the Teamsters, are international unions. And when we say international, we're not talking nationalities in the United States. We're talking about cross-border. Teamsters, steel workers, auto workers have tens of thousands of members in Canada. So I don't know exactly how that stuff works with them. That's why, other than to the general point of view that I think is a fair one, which is that wages and benefits, workers should have the right to organize themselves and have a good standard of living throughout the world, and that would have an impact on trade. Other than that, I'm very hesitant to say what the details should be or shouldn't be.
Conceptually, is there a conflict? I think many labor people, and I don't mean to stereotype, but you certainly are not a supporter of President Trump.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think unions ended up embracing some of his ideas that said we need to reform the trade relationship with a lot of countries.
I think it was the other way
around.
Tell
me more.
Yeah, I think we, the union movement, was pushing for fair trade way before most of the major political leaders from the two parties. And I think that he seized upon it in a very cynical and demagogical fashion, and he's using that to try to build up some base of support for himself because he's in trouble in so many other areas.
But isn't there a conflict like him, or like the message, hate the man, or dislike what the man's doing?
I suppose that's possible, sure. And that's why I say, and I know some of the big internationals have been very careful about how they deal with this question of trade. I understand that completely, and I think details are important. Then you can make a determination whether the administration currently in office has done some things which will help the American working class in the area of job security. And I'm not saying that's an impossibility. I'm saying I haven't seen the impact of that. And in fact, we see things like layoffs because of some of the tariffs imposed. And we see the threatening of moving companies out of the country as a result of that. And so I think it's all over the map at this point.
Which brings us conveniently to the midterms. Mm. If you're talking about quality of life issues, economic issues, that's a platform. That's something that pretty much anyone can run on.
Right.
How do you see the midterms?
We want candidates who are going to protect Medicare, who are going to protect our standard of living, who are going to be sympathetic to questions like wage disparity and taxes that only go to the rich. We're going to be looking at people who have infrastructure plans that don't include gutting things like prevailing rate, that provide the government with running the show when it comes to rebuilding bridges and roads and airports and the like. And I think that most American labor leaders want to have a sane foreign policy that won't lead to some war because somebody wants to make fun of some dictator someplace.
I always hesitate when I ask this question because people, be they politicians, labor leaders, anyone whose role includes a certain amount of advocacy, will oftentimes answer the question with what they'd like to see rather than what might happen. I'm assuming you'd like to see Democrats take the House. Do you think they will?
Oh, I'm not in the political prediction business. I'll tell you this. We're going to work very hard to make sure that the next 2 years are not the same as the last 2 years.
Explain.
Well, I don't think we want to have control of the three, presidency, the Senate, and the House, in the next 2 years.
So you want to see the House change?
Yes, I think that's a
You just don't know whether
statement.
It will.
That's right.
Okay.
And I think that's to be determined in the next 9 weeks. Or is it 11 weeks? It's not 9 or 10 weeks, whatever it is, 70 days. Yeah, I think that's to be determined. And it's going to be an interesting Donnybrook.
Talk about the local races. Mm-hmm. We have Congressman Tom Reed, New York 23rd. Mm-hmm. According to the Cook Political Report, that seat is Republican plus six. We have the Higgins seat, New York 26. According to Cook, that's Democrat plus 11. Mm-hmm. According to Cook, also New York 27, the right now, for now, Collins seat, to be determined seat, also plus 11 Republican. Does it bother you that in each of these big local races, the incumbent's going to win? There isn't a lot of, I'm thinking specifically of turnout, and I'm thinking of someone who just said that you'd like to see the House.
We have a challenge when you have redistricting take place like it did, where a district is really cut out for the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. And that's what happened in 2012. New York is as lopsided as the Collins District is. There are districts in this country which are even more lopsided than that. It's just crazy, but it's true. And in New York State, there's none that are as lopsided for Republicans over Democrats, for example, as Collins District, which is an interesting race. We could talk further if you like. Reed one was cut for a Republican. Obviously, the Higgins is cut for a Democrat. So it makes it challenging, yes.
Does it bother you, though, that we really don't have competitive races based on the composition of the district?
Absolutely. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're going to be more that the Collins race will be more competitive than it's been in some time.
Well, because of...
Well, that happened.
Right.
I mean, he was indicted, and his name is still on the ballot. So we're going to have to see what happens. But as of right now, and it's not impossible for an indicted a person to be elected to a public office. There's examples of this in American history.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it certainly makes it more interesting than it was before he was indicted.
You think Murray's got a shot because of it?
I think that that's a race that's going to be very interesting. I do think it has a shot. Everybody's got a shot before the election takes place. I'm not going to predict he's going to win. I don't care about predicting. I know that we feel that Congressman Collins has been very...
unfriendly to labor.
To be mild about it. Yes, that's correct. And so we were inclined to see a good candidate run against him that we could get involved in. He's got himself in his own problems. Nobody did this to him except for himself. And now we're going to go ahead and look much more carefully at that race compared to what we would have otherwise.
If that district is solidly Republican, and I think most analysts would say that, does the Republican Party have the opportunity, as long as it's going to go Republican, we can put a moderate in there?
First of all, Collins would have to have his name removed from the
right,
ballot.
Which has which all a, sorts
it's
of...
All kind, it's not clear. But let's say that it happens. Yes, if there was a moderate Republican in the tradition of Nelson Rockefeller type, or Amo Houghton, for example, who some of your listeners may not remember, but was a Rockefeller Republican for
Corning Area Republican.
That's right, lack of a better term, a Rockefeller Republican.
Yeah.
It would make it harder to win a race like that, and then we might even say to ourselves, well, maybe it doesn't matter as much. That's not what we're talking about. We have to, first of all, the Republican chairs of eight counties have to decide on who they want. And if I'm reading this properly, I would guess it's somebody who supports President Trump. Well, Chris Collins was Trump's number one, actually was his first congressional supporter.
And politics being politics, it's probably going to be someone you would think that might be able to self-fund.
That's correct.
So,
it's an easier sell, of course.
Play the game with me. I'm thinking of wealthy business people who are really strong Trump supporters. Carl Pelladino?
They could give him the nod. He'd have to get on the ballot as a result of Collins leaving it. And then that would probably have to withstand some sort of court or juridical process. Well, that's an interesting question all in and of itself. I'm not going to get into too much of this, but I would say that he's been named as one of those who's interested, and I would guess that he'd have to be. I would assume they're considering him.
Do you think there's trouble there if they pluck someone out of the state assembly
or state senate? Assembly, I mean, like Walters.
Yeah.
Well, then they got to fill that spot, and then and Walters. The thing is that. If I'm reading this correctly, they're going to want somebody who's a full-throated Trump supporter. Well, Collins was, and we were interested in running a campaign against him then. So if somebody else comes in and that's what their position is, I don't see why it would be any different for us.
All right. Talk about
except that they wouldn't have an indictment against their name.
Right. Talk a little bit about Governor Cuomo's primary battle with Cynthia Nixon.
We've come out in favor of the governor's reelection, so we're in favor of him winning the primary.
Tell me why.
Because we think he's done a good job economically for our region, Buffalo is just it's a remarkable thing that's happened around here with all of its warts and things that we want to see improved. You can't not see this. And it's meant a lot of really good work, and wages around here have gone up. Unemployment has gone down. we think that that deserves another term. Ms. Nixon is a very interesting woman. She's obviously accomplished in her field, but we're not interested in seeing the governor lose, and we're not interested in seeing the Republicans win, and then perhaps, you know, have the Senate and the governorship. This is not something that we want to see happen.
Nixon is more progressive than the governor?
I guess so. I mean, it's an interesting question. The governor pushed a 15...
The reason I ask is because, again, stereotyping here.
I think labor
would want a more progressive person there, no?
Yes and no. If you said to me 8 years ago that the new governor is going to pass a $15 an hour minimum wage, it was going to have a paid family program, was going to revive the second biggest city in the state, one of the most famous cities in the country, through economic assistance, I would say, well, that's something we probably would support. That's what he's done. So how do then we go in and say, no, you shouldn't have our endorsement? If in politics, from the point of view of most of the unions, we think we should be principled about these things. And if somebody has done those kinds of things. Now, again, that isn't to say there aren't warts. Of course there are, or that it's not perfect. I mean, even somebody as renowned in history as Franklin Delano Roosevelt had unions who thought he wasn't going far enough. Okay, but you have to look at the balance. He saved the United States from fascism. He rebuilt a country out of the depths of the Great Depression. He didn't do everything.
Do you have concerns over the Prococo verdict, the Buffalo Billion verdict? Do you side with any of the critics that have said Governor Cuomo has not taken really any substantive action on ethics issues?
Let's just say that ethics in politics are something that are important to improve.
Is there something that should be done legislatively?
Well, there were a couple of attempts that the state AFL-CIO supported last time, didn't get through, and maybe they'll try again in the next 4 months.
And germane to your support of Governor Cuomo, the convictions of Prococo.
I just don't have anything to say about any of that. I don't know those people. I never met any of them. I sat in an audience once and I heard them speak. I didn't hear Prococo speak. I heard Caliero's speak. I have no idea. I've not. Our labor federation is not on the Western Region Economic Development Board. It's not our purview.
If we will have this conversation again next year,
and both alive and doing well.
I hear what you say about predictions.
Yeah.
But how is the year to come, you think, going to be different than the year we just had?
There's been a lot of exposure of Donald Trump. This most recent one with John McCain is just unbelievable. But there, the indictment of Cohen, the pleading of Cohen, the conviction of Manafort. Who knows what the next shoe will be to drop, and who knows how he'll react to that? It's a very tough time, Dave, to make predictions on the future developments of our society. I can say this, that I think our labor movement is in favor of, I said it before, of economic justice, and then I made a point about political justice or democracy, small d, and that I think we'll be fighting to make sure those things are not yanked away from us or are not imposed, or where a lesser standard of living is imposed upon us. I think we'll fight those things, and we'll do it the way we always have done it, through organizing and through legislative work and through political work and through social contacts with all kinds of organizations and people. And I'm still feeling pretty optimistic that we are not going to end up in a situation like I think that the Trumpies would like, which is an authoritarian rule with the trappings of democracy.